Spending years behind desks, staring at screens, and doing work so removed from immediate impact, I revere people who walk the streets and meet the people where they are. The elder who spends retirement running a community garden that employs kids from low-income neighborhoods, the peer who goes to murder scenes and prevents retaliation, and full-time doulas who spend long hours in maternity wards to improve birth outcomes for underserved populations. This drive to get back among the people almost drove me to leave a job as the CEO of a multi-million-dollar foundation. The position was fulfilling, and it gave me the opportunity to fund amazing work. But I wanted to move beyond supporting the people who worked on the front lines so I could have more direct impact. During this time, I attended a conference for Black Foundation leaders. There, I met many like me, professionals who worked to serve the underprivileged and felt ambivalent about being so far removed from them. On the final night of the conference, a colleague recalled a story where she sat in her high-rise office looking down on the streets below as they filled with marching protesters. Seeing the dedication of the crowds, she felt a pang of guilt. It grilled her, asking, "Who do you think you are? Better than them? Sellout sitting up here while your people are struggling down there? If you really cared, you'd go down there with them." Unable to bear another minute of this interrogation, she changed her shoes, stormed out of her office, and hit the elevator button. As she descended, her thoughts began to race. Not only would she join the march that night, she'd join again the next day. She'd join the movement, dedicate herself to the cause, and quit her job. When she stepped out of the front door of her building and onto the street, she saw a pastor from the neighborhood. She ran to him and said she was ready. She looked for a picket sign and listened for the chance to repeat before rattling off her plans. This march, the one tomorrow, and then quitting on Friday so she could give her full attention to the cause. But that was when the smiling reverend scoffed that she didn't have to be so extreme. She could march tonight, work tomorrow, and march the next night. She didn't have to quit one to do the other. He told her to look at all the people marching, a whole line of people filling the street. There were plenty of people who could march, but few had her privileges. According to him, the organizers needed her to be in that office representing them when nobody else would. They would be on the block, but they also needed her in the boardroom. Having the education that can gain a job, the social stability to retain a career, and the resources to listen to this book is a privilege. Sometimes that advantage can seem like a disgrace that makes some want to quit so they can join the march down on the block forever. At the same time, however, that privilege can also provide opportunities to achieve goals even up in that boardroom. People in our position have privilege. Facing that reality, many feel the shame that compels them to deny its existence, and others experience the guilt that drives them to renounce it. But advantages can become ethical if you use them to benefit the disadvantaged. For this reason, this chapter will walk the fine line of avoiding the temptation to either deny privilege or renounce it. Later, chapters will explore organizational changes at the level of practices, policies, and operations. But to increase the likelihood that those other goals will succeed, start with identifying ways to use your privilege.